Welcome to episode 59 of Near Death Dolls. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Paige.
And we're your hosties with the mosties.
While talking about ghosties.
And other, there are no words to describe this case, shit.
Okay, now I'm worried. If Lisa can't find the words, it's bad. And what case is this, you might be asking? Well, it's the Wineville Chicken Coop Murders.
Yes, it is. And after weeks of researching the details of this case, tonight is a good night for a drink. So, Paige, tell me what you're drinking.
Okay, I will. I am trying a Cosmopolitan for the first time in my life.
Ooh, Cosmo. Are we, like, channeling our inner Sex in the City over here?
Fuck yeah. I am so a Miranda. Actually, I don't even remember which one was Miranda.
You know what? I always kind of grew up thinking I was definitely more of a Charlotte, but...
She's the brunette, right? Who's a little more on the prude side.
Yeah, I was going to say the little more prudish one. Yeah. Originally, because I was like, I like her clothing choices and this and that. But the older I get, the more I realize I am a Samantha.
Oh, Samantha is the funny, like, sexy one who...
She's very sex positive and confident and takes no shit.
I love her.
I feel like I'm a little more of her these days. I'm a little more like, I'm into me and I'm going to do what I want when I want with who I want. Except I'm going to be with my husband.
So. And that's who you want. So it's perfect.
Exactly. That's who I want. So there you go. So what brand is it? Is it a pre-made cocktail or what is it?
It is. Well, it's a pre-made cocktail blend, so it doesn't have the alcohol in here, but it's a little baby bottle.
Oh, it's cute.
I like my baby bottles. They have good sales on baby bottles, you know? They're like $4 for $5, you know, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And this one's called Stirrings, as in you're stirring it. Mm. And it's simple cosmopolitan cranberry key lime juice. And then I have a little baby bottle of Absolut vodka that I mixed with it. So let's see how this goes. Baby bottles for me, the baby. Adult. Yeah. I'm an adult, but.
But there is a nipple on my drink.
Spill proof. Mm-hmm. Ooh, it's good. I just tried it.
Yeah.
I love it. Mm, that's nice. I might be one of those bitches who goes to the bar and orders a Cosmo.
Yeah, well, they vary when someone else makes them, but yeah.
What about you, Lisa? What you got to drink?
I am drinking a Austin East Ciders Watermelon Cider, limited release. So, I don't think I've tried the watermelon, so let's have a sip.
Oh,
it's good. It's good. It's definitely like a candy watermelon cider.
Oh, okay. Is it sour?
A little bit, but I love it. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's awesome. You gotta have another sip.
I need y'all all to start chanting chug.
Sip, sip, sip.
Bitch, I said chug.
You do with that, whatever you will. Sip, sip, what the shit? Sip, sip, what the shit? Uh-oh.
Don't forget to swallow.
Don't make her laugh while she's drinking. Cheers.
Cheers.
You're following a watermelon theme. Last week you had a nice watermelon. This week you got a watermelon.
Did I have watermelon last week? What did I do last week?
Yeah, salted, right? Salted watermelon.
Oh, you're right. I did have that salted watermelon Berliner Weiss. That was good. Yeah. No, and although it was kind of counterproductive because we were talking about dehydration while at sea, and I'm over here like...
So salty.
So salty. This one's not nearly as salty. It's very juicy watermelon. Ooh, it's making my mouth water. It's so good. Yeah.
Damn. Okay. Perfect time of year for it, too.
Oh, gosh. Yes. So, I'm going to actually take a sip of water because this made my mouth very syrupy. But I don't know about you, Paige. Are you ready to get into this really, really horrible story? God.
I guess I am. I don't know anything. I have no idea what this is about except that it's supposed to be really bad.
It's bad. Yes. So if you know the story, maybe nothing will surprise you here. But if you don't know the story, it's heartbreaking. And I'm going to go ahead and put a trigger warning right now.
Warning.
Warning. It's for sexual assault of minors. I'm not going to get into a lot of details. I mean, I read a lot of details, some court transcripts and stuff like that. And I'm not going to tell you all the details, that's just not who I am. That's not what this is about. I don't want to just feed into the grossness.
That's not what we're here for.
But I'm here to tell you a story. And I feel like it's a very important story to tell. And that's the only reason why I'm actually telling this one. I told Paige earlier that I did cry while researching this. But like I said, I pushed through, finished researching, and now I'm going to tell you about it.
I appreciate you going through all that research and pain and heartache to come here and not share all the details with us.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome. You're welcome. Like, and I'm sure there's other podcasts you could listen to, or you could do your own research if you want to know the more intimate details, but I don't think they're crucial to the story. Here we go. This is the Wineville Chicken Coop Murders. Between 1926 and 1928, in and around the Los Angeles, California area, a string of kidnappings and murders took place. Several young boys were taken and were never seen alive again. The evil piece of shit perpetrating these horrendous crimes was a man named Gordon Stewart Northcott.
And this was a long time ago. I didn't realize it was back in the 20s.
Yep, between 26 and 28 for the most part. So let's get into the background of Gordon Stewart Northcott. He was born in 1906 in Saskatchewan, Canada. I hope I said that right.
I think you did. It sounds
okay.
Right.
Saskatchewan. Okay. His parents were Sarah Louise and George Cyrus Northcott. Sorry, Cyrus George Northcott. Gordon actually went by his middle name more often, Stewart. So I'm going to be referring to him as Stewart. And actually his parents, like, they all just went by their middle name. I don't know if they just didn't like their first names. I won't really be talking about his dad much. His mom's name was Sarah Louise, but, and I'm just going to call her Sarah Louise because it just got really confusing.
It's interesting. Why even have a first name?
Yeah. So the perpetrator here, Stewart, that's what we're going to call him. He had an older sister named Winifred. Before he was born, Sarah and George had a son named Willie who actually died of pneumonia. And Sarah Louise was so beyond distraught about the death of her son that had died. So much so when she learned she was pregnant with Stewart, she actually attempted on several occasions to end the pregnancy on her own.
She didn't want to go through that again, huh?
She was just so heartbroken. She's like, I can't have another baby, even though she was already pregnant. She tried working out extensively, horseback riding, and even her husband kicked her in the stomach.
What?
Yeah.
Did she ask him or was he just mad?
See, I don't quite know. It can go either way. We don't really know for sure. I think they had gotten in a fight and he just did it, but I'm not really sure.
Okay.
But when she delivered Stewart, she made like minimal effort to keep him alive, feeding him, and that's about it. Like, she had no interest in her new baby. People were really worried about her. I mean, they understood that her other son had just died, but they were very, very concerned. But for some, and I'm not sure how long it lasted, but all of a sudden, just like one day, the clouds parted and she was now in love with her baby. Like, it just, she flipped a switch. She may have, like, I don't want to diagnose. She may have been bipolar or something, but
maybe postpartum depression and it cleared up or something.
Possibly, but I mean, I think there is a thing called prepartum depression where you can be depressed during your pregnancy, but it seemed like she really had a reason to be, if you could say that, because of the death of her other son. But
yeah.
But once this like light flip switch, she was like, this is my boy. And I think she always after that referred to him as my boy.
Wait, so how long did it take for that light switch to click on?
I'm not really sure. There wasn't like really a timeline I could find. There was, and really there was not a lot of information about this either. It was really hard to find.
Yeah, it happened a long time ago. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, and unless you're keeping like journals and diaries and stuff like that, you're not gonna have this information, but I did find it from like one source.
Yeah, no Facebook, can't write up your status.
No, absolutely not. Anyway, so she began like showering Stewart with affection and doting on him to a point where her husband was like annoyed by it.
Dang. Well, he sounds like a jerk anyway. I mean, kicking her in the stomach.
Yeah, but then again, she also, not to say that what he did was okay, but she's also here like hardcore horseback riding and working out trying to end her pregnancy, so I don't know. So Sarah Louise was described by many as overly domineering and emasculating towards her husband, like type of woman.
Okay, sounds like there's a lot of issues going on here.
I would say so, yeah. And while I can see this relationship dynamic, I do wonder if maybe she was described that way because it wasn't particularly like a feminine trait at the time to be assertive and in charge of your household in that way, like over your husband. But
that's true.
I also did see it argued in an article where they're like, no, this wasn't the case of her just being, you know, a strong woman. She was a terrible woman too.
Okay. Okay. So I was thinking about Ed Kemper and his mom and how he always described her as being very domineering and emasculating, and we never get to hear her side of it because she did.
That's true.
It could be like she... Anyway.
No, that's a good point you make. As you'll come to find out in the story, like, she is no angel. Not at all. She did continue to give Stuart anything and everything he could possibly want. I feel like he might have been Regina George from Mean Girls. Where he kicks like his parents out of the master bedroom. He's like, this is my room now.
Yeah, yeah. And the mom's like, yeah, everything, anything you want, just so I could be cool.
I'm not like a regular mom. I'm a cool mom, right?
Cool mom.
So, his older sister, Winifred, I think she went by Winnie, also indulged his every whim, just as their mother, Sarah, did.
Wow.
So he has these two women, like, overly doting on him. His dad just kind of steps back a lot of the time and doesn't seem very involved because we got these two women over here that are just, like, ready to bite your head off at any second. He's probably walking on eggshells. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a great guy, but he also was just like, shh, take a step back.
Yeah, like, what do you do in that situation? Yes. I'm surprised the sister was into it, too. I was thinking maybe it'd be more like a, who's this little kid, you know, getting all the attention, getting all this stuff.
No, she was, like, very, very overly into her brother. So as he grew into his adolescence, people noticed his flamboyant nature, dramatic in his behaviors. He was known to be very charming, but with a hellish temper when he didn't get his way. But that comes from years of being spoiled.
Spoiled.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. He also spent a lot of time grooming himself and preferred to dress sharp, which can't blame me for that. I love a sharp-dressed man. Mm-hmm. As he physically developed, he, sadly, and to his dismay, he grew a lot of, like, thick body hair, like, all over, and people would tease him and call him, like, Ape Boy or Ape Man, just because he just grew all this, like, really thick hair. And shout out to my cousin, who also grows a lot of hair, and is an amateur wrestler who went by the Grizz, like the grizzly bear. He went by the Grizz for the longest time.
That is great. That's a good name. Hey, just embrace it, flip it, reverse it, turn it into something you can use.
Absolutely. He now wrestles in pink spandex and goes by Beautiful Bobby. So, evolution.
Did he get waxed?
I think he just shaves.
Okay.
Shout out Beautiful Bobby.
We hope you win at your next tournament.
I have been to one of his wrestling matches, and it's the fake wrestling. Like, it's a show. It's really a show.
I like those.
And I got so into it. I think I embarrassed my husband because I was like, kick his ass! Like, use the chair! You suck! It was so much fun.
Tag out!
Exactly.
I love those. I love it, too. It's so fun.
A lot of fun. So, Stuart was actually a very talented piano player who enjoyed performing. He'd performed with local orchestras and for, I believe, even maybe like silent movies.
Cool. Damn. They're in California, right?
In California. Yes. I'm sorry. At this point, they had moved to California. He was born in Saskatchewan, and we'll talk about that in a second. But he had dreams of working in Hollywood, though I'm not sure to what extent he wanted to, either doing music for movies or being in them in some way. I'm not 100% sure, but he liked being near the action there.
Okay, he wanted some piece of the action, whatever he could get, maybe.
Right, and like I said, his family did end up moving to California in, I think, 1924.
Okay. From Saskatchewan. I wonder if that was a big culture shift.
Maybe a little. I think it was probably way more exciting because, like, Hollywood, that's where all the shit's going down. And especially in the 20s, that's when things were, like, really developing, moving, and that's, like, the golden era, right?
Yeah, glitz and glam all up and down Hollywood Boulevard.
So, until now, Stuart has just been kind of a bratty kid, but as a teen, he became friends with a boy about his age, and his name was Claude Scott. Stuart charmed his friend's family and paid special attention to Claude's younger brother, whose name was Philip, whom Stuart would call Philly.
Okay. Watch out, Philly.
Philip was around the age, it varies, between the ages of 8 and 12. Stuart allegedly, probably, began sexually assaulting Philip.
Poor Philly.
And to ensure his silence, he told him that what they've done is illegal, and if anyone were to find out, he would go to jail.
Oh my God.
So he began manipulating Philip.
That's so harsh. It's such a hard thing to hear about from the outside perspective and be like, no, don't listen to that person. But of course, as a young person getting molested like that, you don't know any better, you know?
That's
why they target them.
Exactly, exactly. So eventually the truth did come out and Stewart was charged with statutory rape. Again, reports differ. Some say he was placed on probation and some say the charges were actually dropped. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, God.
But either way, news got around about Stewart and he knew he needed to stay away for a while. So he came up with this next idea. I'm not sure how it came into his brain, but he asked his father to purchase him some farmland where Stewart could start a chicken ranch.
Oh, okay. Still in California. Okay.
Firstly, Stewart, who was very into keeping himself clean, well-dressed and comfortable, had never shown any signs of wanting to take on an endeavor such as farming or tending to livestock. So that was kind of like an out of left field, like, all right, here's kind of a pretty boy over here who mm-hmm. just wants to play piano, but now you want me to purchase farm, like, as his father, like, you want me to purchase you some farmland for you? Okay, sure, let's just get you out of our house. Like,
right. Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I'm happy to get you away from me, but also, are you sure you want to get dirty? Because that's a lot of dirty to deal with.
It was a little strange of a request, but his dad was like, okay, let's just do it. So, like I said, really came out of left field, but they were happy he would be doing something productive. So his father purchased 3 acres of land in what was called Wineville, California, in Riverview County.
I've never heard of it. I'm not sure where that is in California, but it's a big state.
It is a big state. We'll talk about what happened later to Wineville. Stewart told his father that he was going to need some help with the chicken ranch, so he was going to go back to Canada and see if he could take one of his sister Winnie's kids back to help him. His older sister, Winifred Winnie, had 4 boys, and the oldest being Sanford Clark at 13 years old, I believe. There was an older sister, Jessie, and then there was Sanford and, I think, 3 younger boys. He told his sister he was going to take one of her kids and that they were going to go do some sightseeing before heading to California. She offered him Sanford, which mm-hmm. he really wanted one of the younger boys, whose name was Kenneth. But apparently Kenneth was Winnie's favorite. And she didn't want to let him go. So she's like, take Stewart. Basically, she's like, I hate my eldest son. Like, take him. Like, I don't want him. He's no good.
Oh my God, Winnie. What the fuck? Doesn't matter. Don't send any of your kids with this piece of shit. I don't care if it's your brother that you love and spoiled. It's partly your fault. No, it's nobody's fault. But besides Stewart.
There you go. Anyways, yeah, I think Kenneth was only like 3 or 4 years old. And she's like, how is he even going to help? Like, no, you can take Sanford. And Stewart told Sanford that they were going to go have a wonderful time with lots of adventures. First, they were going to go visit Regina, which is the capital of Saskatchewan. Because I think where Sanford and his parents lived was maybe a smaller town. So to go to like the big city, like the capital, was like a cool idea.
Exciting.
And then once they got to California, Sanford could start school there and make lots of new friends. But apparently Sanford saw right through Stewart's bullshit and was very skeptical of the whole thing. He was not a fan of his uncle and was not charmed by him the way Winnie was. Like, this was strange Uncle Stewart. Like, he and his sister Jessie were both like, I don't like this guy.
I'm so glad somebody's got some instincts.
Yes. And here's the thing. So Winnie, whatever you want to call her, Sanford's mom and Stewart's sister. Remember, she doted on Stewart, like, to no end. And she is exactly like her mother in the way that she's domineering and controlling over her husband. And her husband just kind of has to take the back seat, too. He's basically the same as Stewart's dad, where he's just like, I don't want to get my head bitten off. I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to keep out of the way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that happens so often, doesn't it? Where the mom and the child or the dad and the child are the same and they grow up just like their parents. They marry someone that's just like their father or mother, and the cycle continues.
Exactly. Oh, gosh. Yes. And we'll talk more about that later, too. But
oh, great.
You're like, oh, fun. Once Stewart and Sanford left, they did not go to Regina, as Stewart had promised. They headed straight to the border and went directly to California. They stayed with Stewart's parents for a few weeks and then went to the ranch. Stuart's father came along to help them set up the farm and build, like, the chicken coops and a farmhouse.
Okay, so he's handy.
Yeah, okay. They even arranged for Stuart's piano to be brought to the farmhouse so he could continue to practice. I'm like, when are you going to have time? But, you know.
Sounds expensive, too.
It does, doesn't it? So Sanford was not allowed to start school, and he was given a majority of the chores and very little food.
What the fuck? He didn't even feed him?
Mm-mm. He wasn't allowed to leave the ranch without Stuart or socialize with any kids his own age. There wasn't a lot of kids around, but he still was not allowed to talk to anyone.
Red flag.
And not long after they were left alone together, Stuart began both physically and sexually assaulting Sanford nearly every day.
Oh my god, he's like, he has a sex slave. He's got somebody who's doing all the work on this ranch.
He's an everything slave. Like, yeah. Everything.
Yeah.
And girlfriend, it only gets worse. Okay.
Poor Sanford.
Sanford would later testify that Stuart had beaten him, cut him, whipped him so much that he had multiple scars all over his body. Stuart had even poured boiling water on Sanford while he was sleeping and scarred much of Sanford's back.
Why? Even when he's sleeping, he can't get any rest.
No. Mm-mm.
Sip, sip, what the shit. Here we go.
Here we go.
Good thing we have good drinks today. We ain't gonna need it.
Definitely. Okay, so Stuart constantly reminded him that if he were to attempt to run away, that he would kill him.
Manipulation tactics are back.
Only gets worse, Paige. Every time you say something bad, it's going to get worse.
I'll stop talking. Maybe it'll help.
No, you're fine. I know it's coming. You don't, so there you
go. I don't. I do not.
So the physical abuse didn't go completely unnoticed by others. So a neighbor came upon Stuart beating Sanford one day and told him to stop. And Stuart did for a bit, and then the neighbor could actually hear him beating Sanford from his property. Like, he could hear the screams and the snap of whatever he was beating him with.
Ugh.
And here's the really sad thing. The neighbor ended up moving away not long after, citing that he was afraid to live close to Stuart.
Even the neighbor, a grown-ass man, I assume, is afraid of this guy.
Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, Stuart, I think he's only 18 or 19 at this point. He's not very old. He's not like a 30-year-old with like muscles on him. He's like a 19-year-old scumbag.
Jesus Christ. I don't know why I was picturing a 34-year-old.
Mm-mm. No, very young. There's only a couple years difference between him and Sanford.
That's awful. Oh. And I wish they didn't. Of course, they didn't have like cell phones or internet or anything. But I wish he could just contact his mom and be like, your little brother that you love so much is a piece of shit.
I think she had a feeling of what kind of person he was. She's at least seen his outbursts and stuff like that, so.
And she said, I don't like this kid. Take him. He's the one you can have.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And she knew about the statutory rape conviction of, or at least the rumors or whatever, of Philip. So she knew.
And it was potentially going to be a problem.
Right. So she gave no shits. On the occasions that Stuart would go into town, he wasn't usually getting supplies. He went to a town a lot, but he wasn't usually getting supplies. He would tell Sanford that he was going for quote-unquote fresh meat, which is code for I'm going to lure children into my car.
Fresh meat. He's not going to the butcher.
He is not. Stuart would be gone all day, and he would bring back young boys to assault.
Oh my god! Sanford's there like, dude, you shouldn't have gotten in the car. This is not good.
No. Sanford was always told to go outside while Stuart abused the victims for an hour or two, and then Stuart would drive off with the boys, presumably to return them somewhere.
Hopefully.
One time, Stuart found a boy sitting alone in town. He asked the boy if he wanted to make some money by putting his hands down Stuart's pants. The boy said no.
Oh, good.
I think he was maybe under the age of 12, between like probably like 8 and 12. Stuart then asked him if he'd like to see the puppy he had in his car. This time the boy said yes, which I'm like, wait, I know you're a kid. But this guy said, touch me down my pants. No? Okay, you want to go see my dog? That's a no.
It's the same fucking question. You just happened to say puppy instead of pants.
Ugh, okay. So anyways, this time the boy said yes and followed Stuart. As they got closer, Stuart said they could take a drive together? And the boy said no. Then Stuart grabbed him by the arm and started trying to drag him towards the car, but the boy kind of escaped his grasp and luckily saw his dad, who he had originally been waiting on. His dad was doing something inside a building. I don't know if it was like a bank or whatever. And his dad came out and saw what was going on and started chasing Stuart.
Oh my God.
But Stuart got away and drove off in his car.
You know, this is why we're in this world right now where we have quote-unquote helicopter parents. It's because of this kind of shit. You can't leave your kid out for 5 minutes without some creep coming by. Yes. I mean, it doesn't happen every single day. But the fact that it does happen, you got to be careful every single day.
You have to. Oh my gosh, you have to. And you, that's so funny you said that exact phrase, helicopter parent, because I read that in an article about how, you know, back then there weren't helicopter parents, but now it's like almost necessary. And some people will, you know, put down others for being a helicopter parent, but you kind of fucking have to be at this point.
You don't want your kid driving off with some guy. Like, that guy, that kid was kind of smart. He was pulling back. He's like, no, I don't want to go in your fucking car, you creep. Mm-hmm. And he was being dragged. Like, he didn't have a choice.
Mm-mm, no. And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, my parents let me go, like, all the way down the street, down to the cul-de-sac, and loop back around. And it was, like, a whole street length. And mm-hmm. they weren't, like, hanging out outside watching me. I would go inside and say, hey, I'm going to go ride my bike down to the cul-de-sac and back a few times. And they'd be like, all right, just come in, like, in 30 minutes. I could have been snatched up in the first 2 minutes. They yeah, 30 minutes. They would not know where I was. There was no one watching me.
No.
I didn't live in the neighborhood where all the parents looked out for, like, all the kids. No. I was just going down the street by myself.
30 minutes is plenty of time for somebody to see you and come and grab you.
Yes. Absolutely. So, I don't know if you can you hear the rain?
No.
Okay, it's like hitting my window real hard.
Woo! Okay. Okay. We'll watch out for that.
Right? So this was definitely Stuart's tactic to lure kids. He'd promise car rides, puppies, toys, money, and other things.
I kind of hope that dad had come up and like fucking socked him in the face. Like, don't touch my kid.
He had a penknife and went after him.
That's even better. Yeah.
And I think I read that the man actually was able to, like, grab hold of him and was threatening him, but somehow Stuart got away. But still, I'm like, you should have sliced up that motherfucker right away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Held on to him until mm-hmm. a policeman come by or something.
Right. So I'm about to talk now about the murders, and I, like I said, I won't get into too much detail. There are little bits, and they are tough, so be warned.
Consider myself warned.
One day in early 1928, Stuart returned to the ranch and told Sanford that he had killed a boy, probably in his teens. He didn't say if he knew the name of the boy, but he did say to Sanford that it's because he knew too much.
Oh shit, that's so scary at Sanford, because Sanford's sitting there like, I know too much too!
Sanford knows a lot.
Yeah.
And then Stuart showed him in the trunk of his car a bucket, and in the bucket was the head of a presumably Mexican teenage boy.
Oh my God! Just in the a head. Bucket!
In a bucket.
Just the head. In the trunk.
Yes.
Oh my God. And Sanford's just learning more and more and getting himself more and more tangled up in this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And one day Stuart's going to be like, you know too much too.
Mm-hmm. Stuart said he left the body in a ditch on his way back because there was nowhere else to put it. He made a fire and tried burning the head, but it didn't cause the skull to break down. So he ended up smashing it with an axe, placing pieces in multiple bags of garbage, and took it to the dump that he usually would take trash to.
Jesus.
Stuart told Sanford they'd need to have the same story down because they were going to have to take a trip to Los Angeles to see Stuart's parents, and they were going to have to tell him what, quote-unquote, happened.
Why? Why would he have to tell his parents this?
I'm still kind of wondering that, too, but you'll see as the story goes on. The story that Stuart devised was that they, quote-unquote, hired this boy to work on the farm for a while because Sanford apparently was sick and couldn't work that few days, so they hired this boy.
Sick of something.
Bullshit. And while the boy was on the farm, they caught him stealing. The boy, now that this is just a story, the boy threatened Stuart with a knife, and Stuart shot him. And then Sanford was the one who decapitated him. Remember, just the story, cover story, not actually what happened.
Not actually what happened.
Not actually what happened. So this is what they were going to tell Stuart's parents. So the boy's body was found about a day after his murder by a farmer and his dog. Apparently the dog, like, ran up and started barking, and then the farmer found him, so... Poor dog.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yes. poor everybody, but, like, you know, dog discovered the body. The autopsy concluded that he died from a gunshot wound to the thorax and was decapitated right after. They did note that he didn't appear to be sodomized, so...
Well, it could have been worse, I guess.
But here's my theory, okay? And I think this might be some other people's theories too, but based on Stuart's behaviors, one might think that he was going to sexually assault this boy, but maybe the boy tried to escape and was shot and killed before he could get away completely.
Okay. Okay. And he was not. Never mind.
No, he was not sexually assaulted after his death. According to the autopsy, they didn't see any kind of trauma in that area. Stuart's next known victim was a 9-year-old boy named Walter Collins. Apparently, Stuart had known of Walter for some time before abducting him. It was said that Stuart used to actually see Walter at a grocery store that I think Stuart worked at, or at least frequented. So he had seen this little boy over time and, like, paid special attention to him. So Walter was last seen in front of his house March 10th, 1928. I read that Stuart had been on vacation, quote-unquote, for about a week, and during his absence, his mother, Sarah Louise, came to keep an eye on the ranch and on Sanford. So when Stuart returned to the ranch, he had Walter Collins with him. He kept Walter locked in the hen house, only opening the door to basically rape him.
He shows up, his mom is at the ranch. I know his mom's a weirdo, and we can't trust her, but it's like, why do you have another little boy? What do you need that for? Yeah.
Yes, but she was actually worse than just looking the other way. For whatever sick reason, she just let him do this. I don't know. But she actually proposed after, I guess, he had been raped a few times that they kill Walter.
She, what the fuck? Okay, I need another drink. I'm sorry. Sip, sip, what the shit? I didn't realize she was that bad.
Even worse than that, apparently she was the one who said not only to kill him, but that Stuart, Sanford, and herself would all have a hand in it, so they'd all be culpable.
What the fuck? Why does she care this much about her fucking loser son? I'd be like, you're going to fucking jail right now if I don't shoot you first for what you've done.
Right? More than likely, it was the reason she suggested this was so Sanford would feel that he couldn't go to the police without implicating himself. So there's another manipulation tactic right there.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even Stuart. It's his fucking mom. This is where he learned it from, I guess. From her.
Oh, for sure. As Walter lay sleeping that night, Stuart began hitting him with an axe. Then he made Sanford do it, threatening that he would kill him if he didn't hit Walter a few times with the axe. And then Sarah Louise finished the job.
Stays in the family.
And then Sanford was actually forced to dig a grave for Walter inside the chicken coop.
Oh, chicken coop murders. There it is.
There you go.
There's the title.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry if I seem low energy. I'm just very drained by this.
This is an awful, awful story. Everybody's awful, except for Sanford. I just feel bad for him.
Feel bad for Sanford, for sure. So about 2 months later, Stuart abducted brothers Lewis and Nelson Winslow. Lewis was 12 and Nelson was 10. Stuart took the boys back to the ranch and kept them in the hen house, just as he had done for Walter. Or to Walter, I'm sorry. Worried that people would start come looking for these brothers, he actually forced the boys to write a letter home, explaining that they'd run away to Mexico looking for work and an adventure and that they were safe.
Ran away.
Mm-hmm. And it's odd because when they were abducted, the boys were just coming back from, I think it was like a yacht club meeting, which it sounds weird, but I think it was maybe something that the yacht club was putting on for kids, like a kind of like an arts and craft project day or something like that. That's kind of the vibe I got, is they were like making little model yachts or something. So there was no reason for them not to go home first. There's no reason for them to run away. And people were like, no, there's no way that they just ran away. This is not them.
Good. Nobody was like, ah, bad luck. Jesus.
So not much later, they were murdered by Stuart, who also forced Sanford to participate. And now, my darling Paige, we are going to have a Dolly distraction.
Fuck yeah, this is perfect timing.
We really need a distraction. I just need just a darn minute, okay? So, just for some funsies, I'm going to ask Paige some vampire trivia.
Oh, this is fun. Okay. This is much better than Stuart.
Yes, let's hope so. So, I have a few questions, just a couple, the multiple choice. And they kind of go on more like on the history of vampires, so hopefully you'll enjoy this.
Perfect.
And FYI, I did a little test one, and if you hit the wrong answer, it buzzes really loud, so if I jump, you'll know why. It's because I buzzed. That sounds dirty. I hit the wrong one.
You got buzzed.
Or you hit the wrong one. I get punished for it, so don't get it wrong, Paige.
I might do it on purpose. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want you to get buzzed.
Okay. Thank you. think.
Actually, I do. But anyway.
It's cool. It's all good. Okay, so according to Romanian legend, how could a child be born a vampire? So is it if a vampire slept with a pregnant woman? If a vampire fed on a pregnant woman? If a vampire stared at a pregnant woman? Or if a vampire danced with a pregnant woman?
Oh, damn. I was going to go so many different ways. I was like, if they were born in December, if they were part of twins, if they... There was so many answers I know for that. Because remember from that book I read, yes. The Vampire's Burial and Death? It did not mention any of this. Oh. Okay. Let's see. I'm going to say stared at.
Okay. I am going to guess danced with. Now, I haven't looked at these answers, these questions. I don't know the answers. But I'm going to go with dance with. I feel like that's something out of Dracula. So,
okay.
Paige says stared at a pregnant woman. You were right. I got a ding, ding, oh, ding. Shit. If a vampire Woo-hoo. Stared at a pregnant woman, it was once commonly believed that the child could be marked in its mother's womb. Wow. Good job. I was wrong. You were right. Thank God it was a ding, ding, ding and not a buzz. Okay. So what condition was once commonly mistaken for vampirism? Fibromyalgia? Porphyria? I got that one wrong. Anemia or progeria?
I don't know what two out of the four are. I'm going to say anemia.
That's what I would guess too. Here we go. Wrong. Oh no.
Did you get buzzed?
I got buzzed.
Oh shit.
I know. Okay. So I guess my next one would be the porphyria. The only reason I'm guessing that is because I used to play, I still play Oblivion, and there's like a polymorphic vampirism or something like that, and so the porphyria, it might be porphyria vampirism.
Okay.
I'm guessing that one. Right. I was right. Damn. When a person has porphyria, I know I'm saying it wrong, cells fail to change the body's chemicals called porphyrins and porphyrin precursors into heme, and the substance that gives blood its red color.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Vampire, definitely.
Vampire. All right, we'll do a couple more just for funsies. Lighten the...
Yeah.
You know, okay. So what type of branches laid across a vampire's grave prevent it from rising at night? Do you know this off the top of your head?
Oh, I can't remember. Maybe I will when you say this. The okay. options.
Hawthorn, ash, aspen, oak.
Oh, fuck. Maybe. I'm going to say aspen.
I'm guessing ash. I don't know, but Paige...
I'm sorry, that's what I meant, ash.
Do you want ash or aspen?
Ash, okay, yeah, ash. Sorry.
Wrong, we were both wrong!
Oh, damn it!
All right, let's go with aspen as your next guest. Aspen was correct.
Oh, funny, I was not I was literally like, no, not aspen, I meant ash. Okay,
well, I was It right says aspen was also used for stakes, as it was believed that Christ's cross was made from aspen.
Did not know that, okay.
Did not know that either. All right, this one's way too easy. Well, maybe. I don't know. They threw in a wild card here. Which item is thought to ward off vampires? Mustard seeds, garlic, wild roses, or all of these?
Oh, okay. It might be all of these. I don't know. I haven't heard that. Would you say wild rose and what was the other one besides garlic?
Mustard seeds.
Mustard seeds. Yeah, I don't. I'm assuming it's garlic, but it could also be all of the above.
I'm going to go with all of these. Let's click it. It was right. Ding, ding, ding. All of it.
Okay. It was his trick.
Yeah. It says wild roses and hawthorn plant. And in Europe, sprinkling mustard seeds on the roof of a house was said to keep them away, as is garlic too.
Interesting.
We'll do a couple more. What year did the word vampire first appear in the English language? 1652, 1734, 1527, 1871. So we got a 15, a 16, a 17, or an 18. Let's go with that.
Fuck me. That's just a bunch of numbers in my head. Yeah. I can't, I'll go with the 18. Was there an 18?
1871.
1871.
Oh, that's a little.
That was around Dracula, when Dracula came out.
Okay. Clicking on it now. Wrong.
Fuck. I knew it. Okay.
I'm going to go with 15. That was wrong, too. 17? 17 was right. 1734. The Oxford English Dictionary dates the first appearance of the word vampire as vampire, the English form, or the English from 1734, and the travelogue titled Travels of the Three English Gentlemen.
Damn. Okay. There it is.
But I'm going to do one last one, okay? In Bram Stoker's novel, which of the following was not found in Dracula's castle?
Oh, shit. It's been so long since I've read that. Okay, let's see.
A library. Oh. I said library. I'm sorry. Library.
Library.
I'm not a library person. That's stupid. Okay. Library. Roast chicken. Female vampires. Or servants.
Oh, servants. There was no servants.
I was about to say, I don't remember servants. I feel like there was female vampires and chicken. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the library,
there was
though.
Chicken. There was library. Yes. I'm going to say servants. There was a whole big thing about it.
Okay. Here we go. Correct.
Hell yeah.
Harker dined on roast chicken, read books in the library, and had near sexual encounters with three female vampires. And if you, if you have not seen Dracula Dead and Loving It, that's like God. The funniest scene ever.
You have to watch anybody who likes Dracula or vampires comedy. Even remotely.
Yeah.
Or Leslie Nielsen, mm-hmm. who's great as Dracula. Jesus Christ, that movie.
Oh my gosh.
He's so funny.
That's one of my sister's favorite movies. Like my dad got that for her birthday when we were kids. Like that was like one of her favorite movies. I love it. Love it.
Me too. And that one is great.
The women are like the women are like floating in and they're about to like, you know, have their way with Jonathan. And Dracula's like, get out of here. So they start floating away. He's like, stop that. And they like start walking, like yeah, clomping they go, around. Oh. Like, oh.
Clomp, clomp, clomp. Or like they before that, when they're heading towards the Jonathan, they start like getting all sexual uh-huh. and like getting against furniture. And he goes like, what are you doing to the furniture?
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. Ah. That was the Dolly distraction I needed. For sure.
It was perfect. Okay. Good idea, Lisa.
All right. So let's have one more sip because we're going to okay. we're gonna get into stuff. We're going to get into some stuff. All right. Here we go.
Okay. Let's do it.
So Sanford at this point has been tormented, beaten, raped, and forced to participate in horrid activities at the hands of his uncle and grandmother.
And grandmother. Great. Yes, it's a great family to be in.
So remember Sanford's parents didn't give a shit about him, right?
Yeah, they were like, here, take him. You're the creepy uncle. You can have him.
Right. And if they ever did care, their worries were put to rest because Sanford was forced to write letters back home that were dictated to him by Stuart. Remember he did this with the Winslow boys?
Yeah, he's like, hey, I'm fine. We just did this the other day, right? Like,
yes. Kind of
making it
exactly.
Make it sound okay.
There weren't many, but there were a few letters, and in the letters he'd praise his uncle for treating him so well and teaching him about farming, and he'd say how well he was doing in school and how much fun he was having, like, with the scouts, and there was one line in one of the letters that said, like, and my scouts even had a camp out on Uncle Stuart's land, and he even provided the tents. Like, how generous.
He wishes a bunch of fucking scouts was staying on his land. Creepo.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that.
yeah.
But
yeah.
Thank God for Sanford's older sister, Jessie.
Oh, is she gonna come to the rescue? Please, please, please.
So when she read the letters, she thought, wow, this sounds nothing like my brother. Like, this is not how he would talk. And she also thought, why isn't his handwriting getting any better if he's supposed to be in school? Like,
oh,
no pun intended, chicken scratch. Sorry. Like, literally, no pun intended. Like, she was like, his handwriting looks horrible. And I think I did see a handwritten letter, and it looked, like, awful.
Because what was his last grade he was in?
I don't know,
but... Like, sixth grade or something?
Like, last time he was in school, he was 12, and I think he's getting close to 14 or 15 at this point.
Oh, my God. And all he's been doing is taking care of chickens and burying dead bodies.
Amongst other horrible other things. Yes, you're right. But yeah, so she's like, this isn't right. And she knew her uncle was not a good person and would not be a nurturing or good guardian type of person. Like, she knew this was not who he was. Jessie also knew how fucked up her family was. And she, as soon as she was 18 years old, she moved out of her parents' house. She's like, this is just a fucked up life. Like, can't do this.
Good. I'm glad there was one sane person.
Shortly after, she had saved up some money from her job and was like, you know what? I'm going to go surprise them. I'm going to go to Stewart's Chicken Ranch to see what the fuck is up here, okay? She took it upon herself alone to go check on her brother. Does she not win the Sister of the Year award? Like, Sister of the Lifetime award?
She wins that, hands down. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. When she arrived, Stuart, of course, was not happy to have a visitor, especially knowing that she was there to check up on her brother. Like, he was like, I know what's going on here. Mm-hmm. She noticed that Sanford was small. Like, in the 2 years she hadn't seen him, he had not grown.
Oh, because he's malnourished.
He's malnourished. He actually, he actually lost, like, 20 pounds. So when he should be putting on weight and height and body mass, he was going the opposite way.
child abuse in so many ways.
Stuart was careful not to leave them alone together, knowing that Sanford would tell her what's going on. But Jessie did manage to be alone with Sanford. I think she, like, caught them when they were asleep and, like, woke up Sanford and was like, are you okay? Like, what is going on? This is not okay. But poor Sanford was so abused that it took a few times of her, like, really asking for him to admit, like, what had happened. And I think he really only said, like, yeah, I'm being abused. And I think he alluded, I don't think he outright came and said, but he alluded to the fact that there were murders. Because I think he said something like, do you remember that boy who's gone missing, Walter Collins? Did you read that in the paper? And I think it clicked for her that he had done something.
Oh, God. And that's plenty. That is plenty, sir. I'm glad he was able to get something mm-hmm. out.
Jessie knew she could not let this continue. I'm not sure at what point exactly or all of what was said, but Jessie confronted Stuart about her brother's mistreatment. At the very least, the physical abuse and, like, malnourishment and not being in mm-hmm. school. Mm-hmm. And this provoked Stuart to attack Jessie.
I know, I was like, don't do it.
He knocked her to the floor and started choking her, but apparently Sarah Louise, the grandmother, was there and made Stuart stop. And Jessie left, but she promised Sanford she was going to go get help.
Oh, no, 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 no. She should, I mean, you know, hindsight 2020, and she was probably like, hey, let's get him some food, whatever. But she could have just snuck out in the middle of the night with him if she could have, you know, like, let's get out of here.
Now, I don't know all.
I didn't even talk to him.
Yeah, I don't know all the details, but a part of me would be like, all right, I'm leaving, but I'm taking my brother. Like, you're not stopping me. However, I have no doubt that Sanford would be willing to shoot her point blank in front of his own mother and have no qualms about it. And they would just dig a grave together and bury her and Sanford or whatever. So
I'm surprised she stopped her son from beating up
Jessie,
the sister. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jessie. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are a couple different accounts about what happens next. I found a couple different versions of this story. I don't know which one is true. I went with the one where there's a book written from someone's point of view I'll talk about later, which I feel like I trust a little bit more. But it starts when Jessie returns to Canada, and she's going to the U.S. or the Canadian, like, immigration authorities and told them about the murders and that her brother had been held captive and was abused. Some accounts say that they didn't actually believe her, but when she said that her brother was brought to the country illegally, that's when they went to investigate. I'm not sure. I can't say exactly that's really how it went, but I read that a couple times that they were like, we don't believe you. Oh, there's an illegal immigrant in your country. Oh, we're going to have to go check that out.
No, right? At least it works out in their favor in this instance, hopefully.
Okay, so other accounts did say that they were immediately concerned about the allegations of murder and abuse and sprang into action immediately. So it can go either way.
Either way, they sprang into action.
They did something. So after Jesse's visit, Stuart knew that it wouldn't be long before someone came looking for him. So he packed up as much as he could and fled the ranch with his mother, leaving Sanford behind.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
Yes.
I don't even care. Just leave him behind. You don't need him.
Right. And some versions I read said that they locked him in the chicken coop. And when the police came, they found him. Some say that Stuart and his mom didn't get quite far enough away, and they kind of had to hide in, like, tall grass, like, in their car as immigration or whoever pulled up. And Stuart had told Sanford, look, you need to stall them, tell them that we're already long gone, get rid of them, because if you don't, I will shoot you from the tree line or wherever we're at. So you need to stall them and get them to go away or something like that. So I've read both.
I don't doubt it. I don't fucking doubt it.
So packed up as much as he could, left Sanford behind. When officials found Sanford, they took him into custody, and after a little bit of, like, prodding, Sanford told them everything, even about how he had unwillingly participated in a few of the murders.
Oh, God. I hope they gave him some food, too, for fuck's sake.
They
Give
did.
Give him a hearty meal.
No, okay. They fed him. Okay. I think he actually went to the hospital for a couple weeks for being so malnourished.
Thank God.
Yeah, they helped him get better in that aspect. They asked Sanford to go through pictures of missing boys and see if he could identify any that might have been at the ranch. And he is actually able to pick out a few, other than the murdered ones, too. Like, yeah, this boy was here, and he took him. And there's actually there's not a lot of pictures of Sanford, but there are a few. There's one picture of him looking at a stack of pictures, like, identifying people. I'm like, oh, God, you poor baby. He's only, like, 15. He's still a baby.
Yeah, he looks like he's 12 because he hasn't had any food.
And you know what's also, you can look at a picture in a little bit. If you're listening, you can look at a picture now, whatever. But there's a picture of Sanford like when he's looking through these pictures, and his face looks like it should be that of an older teenager or mid-teenager, but his body looks so small that it's like this, mm-hmm. it almost looks like someone superimposed a head on a body that didn't match because mm-hmm. he's just so malnourished. Poor baby. That's all I can say.
In so many ways, this poor kid.
So Stuart and his mom were actually caught fleeing to Canada, but were sent back to California to await trial. Like, they were extradited. I can't know if they made it to Canada or close to it, but they were sent back to, I think, Los Angeles.
Thank God they were caught.
They were caught. Suck it.
You fucking piece of shit.
At the ranch, no full bodies were discovered, only bone fragments, hair, blood, and pieces of clothing that matched what a few of the boys were last seen wearing.
I hope that's enough. I fucking hope that's enough.
Stuart and presumably his mom actually dug up some of the original graves that these boys were placed in. Burn them, scattered the bones.
God damn, they are thorough.
While awaiting trial, Stuart was trying to toy with the guards and the prosecution lawyers, and he confessed to like 9 murders and then recanted them and then said he had only killed the unnamed Mexican boy and it was in self-defense. So he was flip-flopping every which way like a fish out of water. Mm-hmm. It was nuts. Mm-hmm. And his mother, Sarah Louise, confessed to the murder of Walter Collins, like, solely, and was tried for his murder.
Whoa, dude.
So she...
That's the one that all three of them had a piece of, right, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the trial was a freaking circus by the sound of it. He tried to enter into a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity, and it was denied. Then he tried for just not guilty, and then he tried to essentially motion for a continuance for his counsel to get more evidence and better prepare, which was denied.
Oh, thank God. Thank you. Jesus.
Yeah. Not far into the proceedings, Stuart pulled a Bundy by firing his lawyers and representing himself. Now, he's only like 21.
And he's been living on a chicken farm. He's not exactly, at least didn't Bundy at least go to law school for a little bit?
Yeah. Well,
not that, fuck Bundy too, but. Yeah.
Or I guess you could say Bundy pulled a Northcott.
That's true. He did it first. He did it first.
But he told the judge he had general knowledge of trial proceedings from a correspondence course he had been taking. So they allowed him to continue by himself.
Okay.
And here's the thing. So the reason he decided to fire his lawyers and do it himself is because during the trial, Stuart wanted to himself question Sanford. And they're like, no, that's not how this works. And he's like, well, how would it work if I fired you guys and represented myself? Could I do that? They're like, I guess. But he's like, okay, done. Bye. Like, I'm going to be over here to question my nephew.
All he wants to do is talk to Sanford.
Let's talk to Sanford. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Among other things, but that's definitely very creepy.
Yeah.
So the judge said, okay, I guess.
Great.
And it was mentioned in one article that someone who attended the trial said that Stuart really didn't know what he was doing and he was really trying to just escape by on being charming to the jury and the judge.
Yeah.
Oh, and FYI, the jury was made up of all men because the judge said that this was just too gruesome for a woman to hear. Women were allowed in the courtroom to observe the trial, but they were not allowed to be on the jury. Which I was like,
oh, dang. Okay.
I get it, but fuck.
Right. I mean, I don't want to hear that stuff either, but man, woman, I don't care. Nobody wants to hear it.
No. He got his mother, father, and Sanford on the stand. Naturally, his mother said only good things about Stuart and that his behaviors were because he was actually the product of incest between her husband and their daughter, Winifred. Now, this has never been proven, and it was only... I think a tactic to explain his wickedness is because he was born through incest. I don't think that's true at all. It was never proven. There was nothing ever stating that was the case.
And we already have heard that she didn't want to have... She was pregnant. She was pregnant. She didn't want to have it. Mm-hmm. So, not Winifred. Oh, that's disgusting, though, that's the first thing. She's like, don't worry. It was my daughter and my... the husband who had sex and had a baby. It's okay, right?
Well, she's saying that's why he is the way he is, because, you know, his behaviors are because he's the product of incest.
It's not his fault.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Trying to explain it away. No, that's not how that works at all. Mm-mm. Okay, so when his father, George, got on the stand, he testified that he knew about the murders and that Stuart bragged about them. George also said Stuart needed quicklime to get the bodies to decompose faster, and George bought it for him. So George knew... He didn't participate, like, actively participate, but he also helped.
He bought the lime. He knew what was going on.
He did. And finally, George also said that he was afraid of Stuart, and that's why he went along with helping the way he did.
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, he sounds like a scary guy. I would be scared of him.
So the prosecution was able to find a few living victims of Stewart's abuse that testified against him. But the biggest witness brought on the stand was Sanford.
Good.
And not just for the prosecution, but he had to be grilled on the stand by his abuser, Stewart.
That doesn't sound right.
It really doesn't.
I don't know if courts would do that these days, but maybe.
I don't know. I have no idea. But, you know, he took the stand and he answered all questions from both sides. He even showed the jury the scarring from his back when Stewart poured the boiling water on him.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
So Stewart eventually went on the stand himself and questioned himself, which people were like, this is ridiculous. Have you ever seen that happen? It is ridiculous.
It sounds stupid.
It is, yeah. Because you're asking all leading questions.
Right, right.
But whenever he was on the stand for the prosecution, he would get flustered by their questioning, and he would lash out and swear and, like, reveal his true ugliness and evil.
That's the spoiled brat coming out.
Like, it became very obvious. He then got to sit on the stand, like I said, and question himself, which he thought was a brilliant idea, but the jury saw right through it.
Of course! Who's gonna sit there and be like, oh, this adult man... He's 20, in his 20s, mm-hmm. right? So this adult man is just going to ask himself questions and answer them. That just sounds stupid in any setting. I don't care if you're in a courtroom or an interview. I don't know.
It's just weird. It is.
Yes.
So after a 27-day trial and a two-hour deliberation by the jury, they found him guilty of the murders of the unnamed Mexican boy and of Lewis and Nelson Winslow. And he was sentenced to death by hanging.
Good. I mean...
Yeah, good. That's the right response. His mother, who was found guilty of the murder of Walter Collins, got life in prison, but only served... I don't remember if it was... It was like between 10 and 20 years, and then she was released on probation. She didn't live long after that, I don't think. Actually, I think she died in 1944, so I don't think... I think she got out after like 7 years. I read a couple different things. But... But I think they said she died in 1944, so not long after she got out, she died.
Maybe that's why they let her out. She was dying.
Yeah. Who knows? They said her sentencing was probably because of her age and gender.
Makes sense.
So on October 2nd, 1930, the day of his execution, Stewart sent letters to his father and a preacher. The letter to his father basically said, I want white roses at my funeral. Thanks for the instruction.
God. You won't be there. Yeah. What do you care?
Right. I wouldn't go. The letter to his preacher said that he was totally innocent and that he had falsely confessed to the murders. He was kind of like pressured into it by the guards or something like that. I'm like, no. You flip-flopped a lot of times, dude. Mm-hmm. On the day of his execution, as Stewart was being brought to the gallows, he was sobbing uncontrollably, begging for them to not execute him. He then requested to be blindfolded on his way to the gallows because he did not want to, like, see the setup, I guess. Like, that would be too much for him.
Okay, okay. You only have to deal with it for a little while.
No shit. They even had to drag him up the scaffolding because, like, he went limp or he wouldn't walk or something like that.
Okay, yeah. So he's being extra bratty. He's dragging his feet. Mm-hmm.
So during this time in prison before his execution, he actually really made the guards hate him.
Huh.
Just by being his stupid jerk-faced self.
Imagine that.
So on the day of his execution, it said, I don't know if it's true or not, but it said they intentionally left the rope on the gallows short so it would not break his neck. Now, didn't we talk about that on our Ruth Snyder episode when we were talking about methods of execution and we were talking about how it got botched because the rope could be too short or too long?
Yes, we did.
Mm-hmm. So when the trapdoor fell and Stewart went down, it did not break his neck. And there was a guard at the bottom who grabbed his legs and pulled down to make him suffocate faster. But it took 12 minutes before he stopped moving and was pronounced dead.
Okay. I mean, that could have just been a botched execution, or maybe they did. They were like, fuck this guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't give him a quick death.
Mm-mm. Doesn't deserve that.
So, Sanford was convicted of conspiracy, but the prosecution knew that he was a victim, so he was actually just sent to a reform-type school called Whittier School for Boys. Yeah, no, they knew he was a victim. They weren't going to put him in jail. They knew that he had no choice in this matter. He did what he had to do to survive. That's it.
Right, he's out in the middle of nowhere. He's on a ranch. He doesn't have like, a car or a bicycle to get away. Mm-hmm.
He's beaten, tortured, starved. Like, he was a victim. And the school that they sent him to, the program is praised for being very forward-thinking for the time, and they focused on rehabilitation and enrichment, like teaching the students life skills and trades so they could re-enter society and be able to, like, really contribute. So
good.
Yes. And I was reading, like, through some information about the school, and they were saying how the kids there, you know, of course they want to rehabilitate them, and they said that they made sure the kids don't brag about their crimes, so it's not, like, a competition of, like, who's the baddest. Like, they put a stop to all that. They had, I think the boys, like, lived in dorms, and they had, like, a dorm mother and a dorm father type figure that were really there to help teach them how to be good human beings.
Good.
It was good. It was good that he went there because he had structure, stability, safety. He was not with his family who didn't care about him. Like, this was a good thing for him.
And he hadn't been to school in how long?
Like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So after he was released, he was sent back to Canada, where he didn't really receive a warm welcome by the town. They all kind of read the papers and judged him like, you participated in this? Like, they don't,
it's his fault. Nah,
like, they didn't understand. But he took a job as a mailman and actually eventually won over everyone with his kindness.
Oh.
When World War II broke out, he enlisted, and all of his, like, fellow soldiers said he was bright, kind, cheerful guy, was a good leader. After the war, he returned to his town, got married, and he and his wife actually adopted 2 boys who were a bit older and were considered hard to, harder to adopt because they weren't babies. And one reasoning he gave for adopting rather than having children was that he was afraid that genetically he might pass down, like, the crazy that runs in his family. And he's like, I don't want to do that. Like, I couldn't live with that.
He knows better than anyone that there's kids out there and there's boys out there who are, you know, abandoned by their crazy families and need help and need a good family, good structure. Mm-hmm. I'm glad he was able to provide that.
Exactly. And actually, like, he was such a good person. There was one story about how he had land and he dug up some of the land and then would fill the dug up area with water. So when it got cold enough, it would freeze and basically, like, made a little ice skating park for all the kids in the neighborhood. And, like, the fire department eventually started coming out and helping him, like, fill it and stuff like that. So, like, for a cool, like, neighborhood thing. Like, he was such a good guy, a decent person. And you hear about people being abused, and it's so sad because sometimes they just, it's a cycle where they continue to abuse the next person and down, and that person goes on to, abuse someone else because it's all they know. It becomes ingrained in them.
Yeah.
And he knew that, you know, this is not acceptable. I am not that kind of person. And he went on to live, like, an exemplary life.
That's beautiful.
But it was really sad, though. He had his sons, and I think when his oldest son, Jerry, was about teenage age. When his son was about a teen, it was around 16 or 17, I think, he told his son what happened. And the only reason he said, like, the only reason he gave him the story was because apparently a similar unrelated crime was being investigated, and Sanford was worried that they would dig up this old case. And he didn't want his son to hear about it and hear his name mentioned and be like, Dad, like, oh my God, what happened? Like, he's like, I want you to hear this from me, not from newspapers, not from journalists, anyone that might come knocking or asking questions. I want you to hear the story. So,
yeah, that's good.
Yeah. His son Jerry thought Sanford led a very respectable life. He said his dad, though, always carried a lot of, like, survivor's guilt, among other, you know, things. I mean, he was forced to participate, and, like, he hated himself for it, unfortunately. Even on his deathbed, Jerry told Sanford, like, I love you, Dad. And Sanford replied, why would you? If that doesn't break your heart, I don't know what does.
This poor guy spent all his life,
his whole life,
trying to make up for all that shit that wasn't even his fault.
Not even his fault, but he had so much guilt over it. He's like, how could you possibly love me? And I'm like, that kills me. It just does.
That is heartbreaking. So he was definitely affected by the abuse.
He was. He may not have gone on to continue to reenact that abuse on anyone else, but he definitely carried it in him for his whole life, really.
Yeah.
After his passing, his son Jerry commissioned a writer named Anthony Flacco to make a book about Sanford, and it's called The Road Out of Hell, Sanford Clark and the True Story of the Wineville Murders. And I read a lot of excerpts from this book to get some of my information, and Anthony Flacco, the author, he is not an investigative journalist. He's an actual, like, writer. And I only got to read some of, like, the previews and got little bits and pieces here and there. And I listened to an interview with him, but he said that, you know, I wrote this from the perspective of Sanford. I got a lot of information from his son, lots of transcripts. Like, I got a lot of information, and I wrote it as if, I think it was still third person, but some of the thoughts that were going through his head maybe weren't actually there, but we could presumably think that they were there. So it reads very much like a novel. Okay. But I don't think he took too many creative liberties with the story, if at all, because Sanford's son, Jerry, I think, signed off on it.
That's wonderful, yeah.
And finally, after these murders in the trial, Wineville changed his name to Mira Loma.
Oh.
So I don't know if you've heard of that place.
No, but I would change the name of the town, too.
Yeah. And if you know this story, you know there's a whole other story within this one, which I will actually be covering next week. I purposely left it out, otherwise this episode would have been like 3 hours long, and honestly it deserves its own episode. So, I don't know if we'll call the next episode part two.
Dang. I do not know what's gonna, I don't know what that is, and I'm very interested.
It's very interesting, and there's a whole other element to it that, if you know, you know, and you know where I'm going with it, but if you don't, just hang on, wait till next week, and you'll hear it.
I don't want to wait! I'm impatient and bratty and spoiled.
Chill out, dude. No, I was kidding. But, yeah. Any thoughts, Paige? Because this is where we're wrapping it up.
Yeah, I did have a thought. It's just a comparison because when he was able to tell his son what happened to him and what happened in Wineville, it reminded me of the Mary Bell story, where her daughter, mm-hmm. and, you know, Mary Bell was definitely guilty.
Yeah.
It's not like this story at all. But in this sense, she did not tell her daughter what happened, and her daughter had to find out through the news.
Yes.
And through articles and stuff. And so I'm glad he was able to preemptively go mm-hmm. and tell his son rather than just wait for his son to be like, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think he was getting nervous and getting worried because he heard something else, and he's like, they may start bringing this up because there might be some similarity in it. So he was like, I need to just go ahead and get it out there so you know.
Probably. I don't know if it actually felt good, but I would hope it at least felt a little bit good to get it off his chest and share with somebody he loves what happened to him.
I don't know. Maybe. I think maybe he also felt shame for his involvement, but I think he did the right thing.
Yeah, he did. Oh, sounds like on all accounts he did the right thing as much as he could.
Yeah. And thank God, like I said, thank God for his older sister. Now, I have one thing to say. And I hope this doesn't sound stupid or petty, but I saw a picture of Jesse, and poor Jesse looks like Stuart in a wig.
Oh.
a smidge more feminine, but I was like, oh my God, you look like your uncle. That's horrifying. Like, she had the short, like, 1920s bob haircut, mm-hmm. but it almost looked like it was on Stuart.
Oh. Well, didn't you say he's kind of,
He
took care of himself.
He took care of himself, but he did have some delicate features, like facial features,
Delicate features. Okay. Okay. So, yeah. It sucks mostly because it's such an awful person to be reminded
to
of.
To resemble, right? Like, I was like, I'm like, I know they're related and they're all going to kind of look the same, but like, I was like,
Yeah, she could have ended up looking completely different even as a niece. Mm-hmm. And it turns out she wasn't. Poor girl.
It's okay. She was a good person, and that's really what counts. I'm sorry if I sound...
Right, if it wasn't
don't think
her.
I'm petty or rude or mean. I didn't mean to. They look very similar. So I was like, oh, that sucks that you have to look like your uncle.
Yeah, I wouldn't... that's what I thought you were saying, not like in a petty way. Like, haha, this bitch.
No. I think she was an amazing person to do what she did. She could have been like, I don't care. He's gone. I don't care. He's not... out of sight, out of mind. And she was concerned.
Yeah, or like, I'm concerned, but I don't know what to do about mm-hmm. it. All she had to do was show up and show her support, and that's what kind of fixed mm-hmm.
this is what this kicked issue. It off. I forgot who it was. I think it was actually Anthony Flacco was talking in an interview about how eventually, like, Stuart was starting to get reckless about things, mm-hmm. and that eventually he would have been caught, but it was Jesse who really kicked things into motion before... before more murders happen.
Thank God.
Okay, well...
what an episode, Jesus.
Now you can understand why I literally cried one day while researching this.
I understand. I understand if you had done it every day, because this is an awful case.
Yes. Well, guys, that's our episode. Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, maybe you'd like to join our Patreon. We have a few perky perks, like our show Dolls After Dark. In our regular episodes, we try to stay on topic and tell a good story, but with Dolls After Dark, we go down rabbit holes, and it can get a little dark and dirty. So come check us out. Our links are in the show notes.
That's right. And speaking of checking things out, please check out our socials. Come follow us on Instagram at Near Death Dolls Podcast. Tweet us on the Twitter at Near Death Dolls. We also have a TikTok account where we're having lots of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Just go to TikTok. Yeah, too much fun. No, no such thing. Search Near Death Dolls Podcast on TikTok to find us there. And we're on Tumblr at neardeathdolls.tumblr.com. And if you want to help a doll out, subscribe and leave us a review.
Yes, please do that. And as always, darling dolls, be good to each other.
Until next time, mwah. Bye-bye.
Bye. A special thanks to Sam Hears for our art and music.
If you'd like to see more from him, check out the links in our show notes.